high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in Earth's 24 time zones. I'm Mark Bell, and this is Coast to Coast to Coast to Coast AM. Great to be with you. I was supposed to welcome a radio station at this hour, but I don't know what I've done with the welcome. Oh, here it is. Just had to look in the right pile. It's a WDWS in Champaign, Illinois. 1400 on the dial in Champaign. Now, there's an interesting name for a city. Where do you live? Oh, I live in Champaign. So, hello there to the general manager and program director, Stevie J. Thank you very much for including us in the way above 500 stations now carrying this program. Well, I see a significant amount of conflict in the first two real scary stories there. You know, the real news. The real mainstream news. Big conflict. Get to that in a second. Tomorrow night, Ghost to Ghost AM. This mood hit me last night somehow, about mid-show. The night before, was it? Night before. Was it last night? Getting old. Either way, Ghost to Ghost AM tomorrow night. Now, looking at the real scary stuff, what's going on, for example, in the Middle East. Under pressure to curb Middle East violence, President Bush urged Israel today to pull its troops back from Palestinian cities and dismiss Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat as a failed leader who, quote, betrayed the hopes of his people, end quote. Now, what I don't get here is a U.S. envoy, this is the second story, a U.S. envoy was sent to meet Friday with Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat after the Palestinians and Israel welcomed a new peace initiative by U.S. President George W. Bush, while Israel continued its offensive in the, in the West Bank. Israeli forces there conducting house-to-house searches in Nablus and other cities, and they're just going to do as much as they can, I guess, which is probably what I told you last night. I think we probably told Israel, more or less, you know, go in there, you have so long, go in and rout them out, and then you've got to stop. Now, of course, the risk in all of that is a war. The likelihood probably slim, in my estimation. In other words, I don't think this is going to end that way. However, eventually, it will, they say. The FBI has failed to comply with a presidential order that requires agents who work with the nation's most closely guarded secrets to disclose details of their money finances. Now, that's not good. I mean, that's how you find spies. I mean, spies are the people who otherwise wouldn't have a lot of money. They're civil servants, right? And, you know, if they have a yacht and they have a house in Zurich or something, and a little cottage down in the Bahamas somewhere, these are reasons you might want to look at them, right? Well, they haven't been doing that. Shocking details of how two bored teenagers butchered husband and wife Dartmouth College professors in their home in a plot to steal their ATM cards. There's good reason to kill people, right? Spilled out in court today, case ending with the two getting life sentences or 25 to life. An 18-year-old, 17-year-old get 25 to life. Now, in the other news, this just broke today on MSNBC. You can read all about it if you want to. In an extraordinary case of looking in the right place at the right time, astronomers recently spotted an asteroid previously detected 50 years ago. Observing the asteroid gave the researchers enough information to predict the asteroid's path over the next 8 centuries and to discover a chance that the kilometer-sized space rock may collide with Earth on March 16th of 2880. Well, not too many of you are going to get real concerned about something that far ahead, huh? You'll be dead, buried, and so will your children, and maybe theirs, and so forth. So, in a lot of ways, for a lot of people, even though March 16th, 2880 is going to be a bad day for Earth, one would imagine by then we're going to figure out how to alter its path if it really is headed. You know, it's actually a slim chance, but there is a 20-minute window of time when it could hit. And if it did hit, it could kill millions of people. But, you know, still, 2880 is a very long way away. The thing that you have to worry about, and what they don't tell you in these articles, you know, it was a big deal today, I guess. Some of the major networks reported this major collision at 2880. Worry more about the ones that you don't hear about, the ones that you hear about a day or two after passage. The news stories will always begin the same way. It was discovered today that 2 days ago, Earth had a close call. That is inevitably the way the wire stories begin, and fact of the matter is, you don't really see the ones that are going to hit you. Just the way it is with a bullet, you know? Because actually you don't hear the bullet that hits you, it just goes thunk, and then, of course, you're concerned with the thunk, and you're not hearing the bang at all. Check this out, folks. The Food and Drug Administration has cleared the way for Applied Digital Solutions, Inc. to begin selling an implantable chip that would contain personal identification and medical data, said the company on Thursday. It said it had received a letter indicating the FDA does not consider the chip a medical device under its jurisdiction. VeraChip. A small device, about the size of a grain of rice, emits a radio signal and has been derided by some for its, quote, big brother, end quote, implications. Applied Digital has said it could prove invaluable in emergency situations. When a patient is either unconscious or can't otherwise reveal information, it should sell for about $200. Now, you're going to have to get in line to get yours. A scanner used to read the information contained in the chip would cost between $1,000 and $3,000. So here come the chips, folks. And while we're on that subject, you may recall we had a professor, Kevin Warwick, on the show. You may or may not have heard that program. And so let me read you the Associated Press story on Professor Warwick. Surgeons in Oxford have carried out groundbreaking operation on a cybernetics professor so that his nervous system can be wired to a computer. Professor Kevin Warwick, the world's first cyborg, part human, part machine, hopes that readings can now be taken from the implant in his arm of electrical impulses coursing through his nerves. So, in other words, when we had him on the program, this is a fascinating story. You know, when we had him here, he said, well, he was going to do it. He was going to have the operation, and the operation was coming, you know, in the next week or two. And I said, well, we did a great program on the subject. And I said, well, Professor, when the operation is done, how about coming back? Well, it's done, and now he is the world's first cyborg. And tonight, he will be back. And in the meantime, you can go get your own. As a matter of fact, after this announcement by the chip maker, shares of Applied Digital rose 4 cents, or 8%, to 52 cents in Thursday trading on the Nasdaq stock market. And it's tough to rise on the Nasdaq on any day. So, I guess we all may be in line eventually. Now, the professor, of course, has gone far beyond VeraChip, but it is interesting that on the day that we're going to be interviewing the professor, the FDA has cleared the way for any or all of us to get chips implanted in our bodies. Oh, gee, I can't wait. Now, I don't know whether I should be telling you about this or not, because I don't want to You know, I thought about this, that, you know, I might cause more of it by talking about it, but I'm going to err on the side of caution. I'm getting a lot of emails, a disproportionate number of emails, from people who suddenly feel a catastrophic event of some sort is imminent. And most of them are not saying what, and then you get the usual sprinkling of earthquakes and volcanoes and all the rest of it. Asteroids, who knows? But just a disproportionate, suddenly all these emails from different kinds of people saying that they feel something catastrophic is imminent. And so I'd be remiss in not mentioning how many of those I'm getting. I suppose it could bring more by just mentioning it, but, well, here's one as an example, and I intentionally picked the one I picked here because of who these people are. They say they're pagans. And it reads, "Art, many in the pagan community are suffering from disturbing or violent dreams for the last 2 weeks. I'm a member of several online pagan groups, and the question has been floating around only within the last couple of days regarding the quality of dreams and sleep of many pagans lately." And I'm sure a lot of you out there, Christians, say, well, they're pagans. Of course they don't sleep well. Anyway, the response to these queries has been quite disturbing. It appears that for 2 weeks prior to 9/11, many pagans were having disturbing and or violent dreams. Well, they're having them again. Most of us are having very vivid dreams or are unable to sleep at all. Some of us fear the current trend in dream disturbance means something absolutely horrible is on the horizon, particularly with what's going on in the Middle East. The earth is screaming in pain at what's happening. She's letting those of us tuned in to her know something horribly is wrong, and we may just find that in the next few days, our world will have radically changed yet again. So I thought I would just bring you one of the unusual ones, and that there it is, from pagans. Well, it may be, you know how I've always said that I believe that cloning is about to either take place or has already done so. This is a pretty interesting story, and it comes from a Dubai. You know where Dubai is, right? A woman taking part in a controversial human cloning program for infertile couples is now 8 weeks pregnant, according to Dr. Servino Anatori, the well-known Italian doctor involved in the cloning project banned in his home country, and of course here in the USA. Speaking on his flying visit to the UAE, that would be Dubai, to lecture at the conference on future of genetic engineering and debate on cloning programs throughout the world, he revealed, quote, "Our project is at a very advanced stage. One woman among the thousands of infertile couples in the program is 8 weeks pregnant." He was replying to a question on the status of his project, which he had outlined last year along with another doctor, a Kentucky-based infertility expert. He refused to reveal the country from which the woman comes. He said, "We have about 5,000 infertile couples in the project now." So, not having to read between the lines here, it would appear as though the first public clone is on the way. In the cooker. And I wonder what you all think about that fact. And in other words, it was inevitable. I knew it, you knew it, everybody knew the clones were coming. But now in less than 9 months, one of them is going to be here. Maybe it'll just be a sort of a happy, normal child. But I have severe reservations. Well, here's a cheery little story entitled, it's from abcnews.com, "Polluted Coastline." Check this out. Nearly half of all the waters off the coast of the United States, that would be everywhere, folks, East Coast, West Coast, everywhere, Gulf, nearly half of all waters in the U.S. are so damaged that they cannot fully support aquatic life. For instance, more clams once came from the Great South Bay on New York's Long Island than any other place in the U.S., but the harvest has deteriorated steadily since 1976. Certain clamming areas now are closed after rain because of runoff. EPA gave poor marks to the Northeast and Great Lakes. The worst coastal waters, it said, were in the Gulf of Mexico, where in some places there is no fishing at all. Best marks went to the waters off the southeast and west coasts, but those were graded only as fair. So in other words, half of all our coastline is polluted to the degree that so damaged they cannot fully support aquatic life anymore. Now, it seems to me that ought to be a pretty big bell going off. This one is not, of course, from Mother Nature. This is not some long, cyclic thing that occurs. This is all of us. You know, what we're dumping into the oceans one way or the other, either directly or indirectly. You know, most things make their way to the ocean, right? And so the hand of man directly is involved here. You think about that. Half our entire coastlines can no longer fully support aquatic life. And that's from us. That's not from some mysterious new bug or algae or bloom or whatever. That's just from us. Something to think about. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
I have an idea for an electric car you might like.
You do?
Using pistons.
An electric car using pistons?
Yes.
Really? Why would you have pistons, out of curiosity, in an electric car?
Well, I'm no mechanic, but I believe it would give you more horsepower.
Why?
Well, because you have more unit, more things driving the motor, or the driving.
Well,
thing.
What I'm saying is, though, that a piston in a combustion engine is usually driven up and down by the little explosions caused by the gasoline, right?
Yes.
So if it was just electric and you had to drive the pistons, wouldn't you be doing extra work?
You could use magnetism. If you put a magnet on the end of the piston and an electromagnet at the bottom of the cylinder, you alternate the magnetic current and it moves the piston up and down.
You know, how old are you?
15.
15. You have just said something fairly important, possibly.
Well, I'm the caller that gave you the idea to use time warp field generators to speed up the decay of nuclear waste.
Oh, really? Yes. Okay, then I remember you. Well, I must say, you know, when you think about that a little bit, I wonder, you know, if you modify what he's said a little bit. So he would use electromagnets. Well, that might be one direction, or another direction simply might be permanent magnets. What if pistons were outfitted with a very, very strong magnets, whether they be electromagnetic or whether they be simply magnetized, very strong permanent magnets? As the piston did its work, it would attract, repel, attract, repel, attract, repel, wouldn't it? And so, gosh, I wonder if that young man... Some of you great thinkers out there might apply some of your thinking to what he just said. He's kind of got an idea there. I just suddenly got my head ticking. You know, there might be some sort of magnetic aid. I'm not talking here about some sort of a machine, mysterious machine that'll get, 5,000 miles to the gallon. But you might suddenly get a whole lot better mileage if you used magnetism in the piston process. What an interesting thought. Thank you, young man. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. In the nighttime, with open lines between now and the top of the hour, and then the professor who's got the implant in his arm now.
Sweet dreams are made of the ends. Goodbye, baby, in the treetops when the wind blows. Well, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack jumps over the candlestick. He jumped so high up above, he landed in the cradle of love. Well, rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. So rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop. When the wind blows.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
You've got to wonder if the wind is not just about to blow and our cradle is not just about rock. Anyway, stay right where you are. Open lines straight ahead. And into the night we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Jenny in St. Petersburg.
Jenny?
Mm-hmm. Huh. How are you?
Okay, Jenny, what's up?
Well, I was a little disturbed about the email you got from the pagans. You know, I think that a lot of people confuse Wiccans and pagans with Satanism.
Yeah, I don't care who they are. All I'm telling you is I'm getting a mass of emails. Not just from pagans. I just picked that one out because it was interesting. But you
know,
a lot of
find any prediction from them to be very disturbing, because pagans really try to attune themselves with the forces of nature.
Yes.
And so they may be picking up something really heavy coming.
Well, yeah, that's what they're saying. I mean, there is a disturbance in the force.
They say the motto of pagans is "Do no harm." Mm. It's really different from people who are Satanists.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the name kind of frightens people, but I myself have been picking up some things for a few days. I'm a real novice myself.
You too, huh?
I've been picking up something the last few days, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other day I had a really strong vision of someone on a mountain who was really evil and looking down on, I don't know, it was a little disturbing, but I would think that if you're getting emails from pagans who say that they are having visions,
you'd pay attention to those.
I would pay attention pretty seriously to it.
All right, gotcha. Thank you very much. Well, just a lot of people. I mean, it's not just the pagans. I read one because I just wanted to read a representative email. I'm getting a lot of emails, you know, and so you think to yourself, well, do you report these to everybody? And so the answer is yes. Doesn't mean anything is going to happen, but on the other hand, doesn't mean it won't either. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, there you are.
Oh, there I am. Okay, Art.
Where are you, dear?
I'm calling from Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
And I worked up at the DART facility at Los Alamos National Laboratories.
You did or do?
I did.
Did, okay.
I was fired for blowing the whistle.
Oh?
Yes. I worked up there, and I turned the contractor in, not only for shoddy construction.
Don't tell me any names or anything.
Oh, I won't, because I know I'm being deep doo-doo.
Yeah.
But also for safety concerns, and they were shut down for 15 days on the safety concerns. And I don't know how much I want to say over the air, but with the worry and everything from the pagan email, I'm also a pagan.
Oh, you too?
Yes. Really? And what they're saying is true. I've been having nightmares about this facility. I have written to the president. All of my mail is being sent back to the Department of Defense.
So do you know about something that's going to happen?
Yes, I do, but I would much rather say off the line.
Well,
it's not going to be a pretty sight. It's not going to be pretty.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Based on what you've already said and identified, I won't take it any further on the air. And you, the way you're going to have to do this is contact me by email. And then I'm going to have to make a decision. Now, I'll tell you something, folks. The other day, about a week ago, some guy called, you may recall, and really, you know, put me in a jam. I mean, he said, you know, Art, I know why holes that are greater than 10,000 feet in drilled into the earth are classified. That's what he said. And I said, oh, why? You know, I want the answer on the air, really. And he said, well, if I give you the answer, it would hurt the national security of the U.S. Do you still want me to tell you? I sit there and, you know, what are you going to do, right? You're on the air nationwide and beyond to half the world and, or the whole world. And what are you going to say? Oh, no, let's go ahead and slaughter the security of the U.S. Go ahead and tell me. So I said, no, send it to me in email. Well, it never showed up. So what do you expect? Do you expect that I was told a tall story on the air just so somebody could hear the sound of their own voice rattling through a speaker? Or do you think the guy really knew something and did send an email, which then got intercepted? We know they can do that, right? Or that it was, he was just, you know, so I don't know. And I don't know what you do with calls like the one I just had, either. Something so horrible that she doesn't want to talk about it, and she has inside knowledge. All I can say is email me, or, you know, email me, I guess. Who do you trust anymore? Do you trust your email? Probably not. Is it being monitored? Is my email being monitored? Oh, you can bet your bottom dollar my email's being monitored. You know, they've got that big computer, and it can look in everywhere, you know, telephones, email, all the rest of it. We all know it's really going on. And even if it's not legally going on here in this country, England does not quite have the same laws we do, and they could monitor something from the U.S., and then, of course, the information would make it back to the U.S., so technically they've not violated the domestic law against listening to us all. But I'm well aware that that it's monitored, so it's chancy saying email, but I don't know what else to do. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Okay, I'm from Perum.
Oh, here in town?
Yeah, here now.
And the station you're listening to?
Isn't that awesome? Listen, I have...
No, say the station.
K-9.
There you go.
Please.
KNYE, 95.1.
And thank you for the T-shirts and the coffee mugs.
Oh, you got the T-shirts?
I got one. My ex-husband got one. Yes.
Oh.
Parked at the grocery store. It's wonderful.
Yes, we're out there giving
away.
Yeah.
You guys really are. I got a whole bunch of things to tell you.
All right, fire away.
You're awesome, for one.
Oh, thank you.
Secondly, I saw the balloon go over your house that night.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
You were not imagining it.
It was at 2 o'clock in the morning. My wife rushed in and said, there's a hot air balloon coming over the house. I went, oh, my God, at 2 o'clock in the morning. Sure enough, there it was.
Wasn't that the...
You could hear the guy going...
Yeah.
You know?
So it probably went over by the flats.
It must have been so cool to take a balloon ride at that time of the morning with a big old full moon out there.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, and the earth changes.
Yes.
You know, I'm coming home from Las Vegas. I go in every day.
Uh-huh.
And was coming home late, so it was dark. Just coming over the pass on 160.
Right.
As you're descending that pass summit, I thought I saw a cloud, and I thought, well, maybe it's smoke, whatever. And it turned out to be my truck got pelted, and I thought, what am I going through?
Now your truck got pelted with what?
Oh, well, I'll tell you in a second. I'm going, what is this? Is it raining? Is it hail? So, pretty dark, so I waited till I got home. I got pelted with bees for 2 miles.
Bees. Did you say bees?
Bees. Insects.
Up on the mountain between here and Vegas?
Yes. Two-mile-long
2 miles of bees.
2 miles of bees.
Boy, I would put the metal to pedal to the metal there, and I'd be
I had no idea what I was going through at the time.
Oh my God!
Of course, I didn't stop. I just kept going. But
good move.
We're talking about changes.
Yes.
And if you can imagine, first of all, bees don't swarm at night.
Right.
And so, what's going on?
Beats me.
Yeah.
But you know, as you said, I've been getting a lot of emails, and a lot of people are having a feeling now close in that something's coming pretty quick.
And I do too. A lot of us here in Vegas and Perm too.
Well, yes. We live in a. You tell them out there. We live in a pretty strange place here, don't we?
Oh, we most certainly do. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Strange and wonderful.
All right. Well, thanks for giving the station a plug, and have a good morning.
You're welcome.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. All right. That's a KNYE listener. That's 95.1 here in Pro. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah. Good evening, Art. It's your Learjet Tim from up here in Cold Lake, Alberta.
Yes, sir. What's up?
Not much. Other than the phone lines tonight are doing weird things, aren't they?
Phone lines always do weird things.
I was the thing with over in the Middle East, that horrible situation. You know, we've talked about Nostradamus quite a bit in the past. But when they went into Nablus,
yes,
just in the last few days, first thing that jumped to mind was Mabus. You know, we've talked a lot about that. We beat that to death.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wondered if there's a correlation between Mabus and Nablus, because the end of that quatrain, which is 62, he talks about we'll run the comet. In other words, the passing of a comet. And we actually do have that this period of time.
Well, you know, we've got comets right now, more and more every day, and comets portend change.
They do, and he also says that, he states that, he gives the word 100, 100 hand thirst hunger, which is what is going on in Palestine right now. They're cut off from food and water, basically. But 100, if you use 100, as he has done before, before the end of the year or after the end of the year, 100 days would put us at April the 11th. And with what you were saying earlier at the bottom of the hour about how these different groups are having dreams and whatnot.
Yes. You know, because I get thousands of emails a day, and so I get to sort of monitor what's... I get to take the temperature, you know, of everybody as I read the emails, and I'm just getting a sudden rash of, something's going to happen kind of emails.
Yeah. This is a little vague. All he talks about is the vengeance is seen, and we're seeing vengeance now, and he just talks about of animals and beasts. A horrible defeat. So, you know, that's kind of wide open for interpretation.
Yeah, I was going to say, that could be interpreted in almost any way at all and almost laid on to any event that would occur one way or the other. So I'm not ignoring these, and maybe it's just sort of a 9-1-1 flashback people are having, you know, some sort of effect or another. Or it could be the real McCoy. There's really no way to tell. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hello,
well, that is, if you turn your radio off, you're going to be on the air.
I got it.
Okay, good. Where are you?
I'm in Morrisville, Pennsylvania. I'm listening to 1210, The Big Talker.
Yes, sir, out of Philadelphia, WPHT.
You got it. First of all, I just want to say I listen to you as much as I can every night. I purposely go out and pick up some late-night food to listen to you on purpose.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a nice way for me to get away from my business and just drive and just listening to all the cool things that are going on.
I understand that. Night driving is my favorite in all the world. I would rather drive at night than during the day any day.
Absolutely. It's no traffic. Nobody's around.
That's it.
What I wanted to say was about last night when you had the GIS on.
Yes.
Had they ever thought of having their electronic voice phenomenon test going on during a autopsy?
Oh, brother.
I know that sounds kind of sick. But
no, it is kind of sick, actually. but yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good suggestion. But, you know, it really, what I get from that night and the night before and all the rest of it is that we definitely survive death with some form of consciousness. And I don't know about you, but the last place I'd want to be is present at my own autopsy. I don't even listen to my own shows.
Right.
You know, much less wanting to sit there and stand there or hover there, probably more likely, and watch somebody delve into my insides.
Yeah, it should be a curiosity test thing whether or not the person's going, don't do that.
No doubt revealing the ravages of all my bad habits and commenting on them as they come upon them. No, thank you.
Absolutely. Hey, can I get a quick plug-in for my business? Is that okay, or are you against that?
Well, when you put it that way, no, I don't want to do it. I mean, if you call up and said, well, you know, I work for so-and-so, that's all right, but you can't sort of directly plug a business, otherwise it's called a commercial.
True. It is my own business.
So for the rest of you there, think about it this way. If you preface it by saying, can I plug my business, then you sort of put it out of bounds. If you say, well, you know, I work for so-and-so, then you've said something personal. But when you're saying, can I plug my business, no, that's more like a commercial. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. How are you tonight, Art?
Pretty okay.
All right. I have two fantasy interviews I'd love to have heard you do.
And they would be?
And unfortunately, both men are dead, dadgummit.
They're dead? Well, that doesn't mean on this program that we can't interact in some way with them. So what do you have in mind?
Louis L'Amour.
That's going to be hard. All right.
And Robert Heinlein.
Well.
Have you ever read anything by either one of the gentlemen?
Well,
they're both
course.
Authors.
Yes, of course.
And I know Louis L'Amour in the latter part of his career was starting to write about the unusual.
Yes.
Put it that way.
Yes. Well, that's because people who investigate the unusual and are open-minded have no other path to travel.
This is true.
So, you know, I can't make any promises, but, you know, I get all kinds of guests here, so you never know. You never know. I'm reminding you again, tomorrow night is Ghost to Ghost. Now, listen to me closely. We only take the best, scariest ghost stories. And there's such a plethora of ghost stories available that we can afford to be choosy. So if you only have a mediocre ghost story, don't call. If you have a premium ghost story, then call. That'll be tomorrow night, Ghost to Ghost, all the way. If you have encountered, you don't want to say the living dead, because, you know, they're not really living, not in the physical sense. But if you have encountered that which was alive in the physical sense at one point, then tomorrow night is your night. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hello?
Hi. My name's Mark, and I'm actually a pretty new listener to your show.
Well, that's okay, and that's good. Where are you?
St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, KDRS.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yes, sir.
I just kind of wanted to make a comment about it had to touch on, you guys were talking about cloning.
Oh, yes. Oh, we may have our first clone in the cooker.
Well, this is, I just kind of wanted to throw this out there.
Go ahead.
And I could be crazy. This is just a hunch of mine. I myself am a Christian, so I don't know if you've heard of the books.
He hung up. Maybe he was going to refer to a book that suddenly fled his mind. Actually, there's a lot of talk we could do about the first clone being in the cooker. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay, sir.
I'm listening to 1510 WLAC out of Knoxville, but I'm in Fletcher, North Carolina.
Well, that tells you how far it goes. Yes,
sir. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the calls the way you do without going through a screener. That's great.
No, I don't use screeners. I don't believe in them.
And I'll be quite honestly, I don't know if you've tossed out a subject for the evening or not, but I'd like to bring something up that happened to me.
Go.
In the mid-50s. I'll be 60 in August.
Yes, sir.
So I grew up in the 50s, and this was in Miami, Florida. I'm a little nervous.
I understand. No, just go ahead.
We lived in a section of Miami called Alapata. It was on 51st Street, and our house sat in the back of our lot. The neighbors to the rear of us, their house was in the front, so their backyard was like the playground for all the local kids, the neighbor kids and whatnot.
Gotcha.
He was a contractor. The man that lived, his name was Hunt, but it's immaterial. He was a contractor, and he had different things set up in his backyard. One of the things he had was a long stack of pipes. The clay pipes. I forgot if they were black or that red clay color, but they were banded together.
Yeah.
And they had chased me off of this a couple of times.
Which made you all the more curious, I'm sure. We only have about a minute.
Anyway, one day I thought I was going to see how far I could reach down in there, and I fell in. And there was nobody at my house and the neighbors to the side of us. And I went down head first, and my feet was below the top of the pipes. And I was yelling for help, and one lady,
brother,
she pulled me out. And I never thanked her, because back then, Art, I was more concerned about getting in trouble. And
yeah, I understand that. Who do you think that lady was?
Well, I think she was my guardian angel. But she was the only lady home, and the jalousies just happened to be open in her in the kitchen. Where
so
she was
should
at.
You have known her? I mean, she was there in a yard.
I was yelling for help. I was yelling for help.
And with just only your feet sticking out.
My feet weren't even sticking out. They were below the level
brother.
Of this lip.
Oh, brother.
And I was down in there against the dirt.
What's your first name?
Her name was...
No, your first name.
My first name is Norman.
Norman.
Right.
So the Norman baby in a pipe. Oh. All right, well, listen, I'm out of time. The show is over this hour. I've got to go, and we've got to get a call into Great Britain. Because he's gone and done it. Professor Warwick has gone and had the operation. Details coming up.
I've been where the eagle flies, rode his wings across autumn skies, kissed the sun, touched the moon, but he left me much too soon. His ladybird, he left his ladybird.
Ladybird, come on down, I'm here waiting on the ground.
Be it sight, sound, smell or touch, there's something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak with roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard. And they use them to help us to
wanna take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0900. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
How much coincidence do you believe in? This is an interesting program for a number of reasons. A news story dated April 4th. FDA clears implantable chip for market in the U.S. That's right. Clears implantable chip for market in the U.S. The FDA has cleared the way for Applied Digital Solutions to begin selling an implantable chip that would contain personal ID and medical data. You can get your chip for about $200. I don't know what it's going to cost to get put in you, but about $200. The reader costs between $1,000 and $3,000. It'll be a little transmitter inside of you. So, on the NASDAQ, their stock rose 4 cents. Or 8% to 52 cents. We had, a couple of weeks ago, Professor Warwick on, and here's another Associated Press story. How coincidental, huh? Surgeons in Oxford have indeed carried out a groundbreaking operation in cybernetics. In a cybernetics professor, actually a cyborg now, I guess, isn't he? So that his nervous system can be wired directly to a computer. And the Associated Press story goes on from there, but when we had him on last, he said he was going to have the operation. And tonight we actually have him here to talk about the operation because it's all over. Dr. Kevin Warwick is, in fact, a professor of cybernetics at the University of Reading, UK, where he carries out research in artificial intelligence, control, and robotics. His favorite topic is pushing back the frontiers of machine intelligence. Kevin began his career by joining British Telecom, with whom he spent the next 6 years. At 22, took his first degree at Aston University, followed by a PhD and research post at Imperial College London. He subsequently held positions at Oxford, Newcastle, Warwick Universities, before being offered the chair at Reading at the age of 32. Oh, that's definitely prodigy age for that kind of position. Kevin has published over 300 research papers. His latest paperback, In the Mind of the Machine, gives a warning of a future in which machines are more intelligent than humans. He has been awarded higher doctorates both by the Imperial College and the Czech Academy of Sciences. Prague has been described as Britain's leading prophet of the robot age. He appears in the 1999 Guinness Book of Records for Internet Robot Learning Experiments. In 98, Kevin shocked the international scientific community by having a silicon chip transponder surgically implanted in his left arm. That experiment allowed a computer to monitor him as he moved through halls and offices of the Department of Cybernetics at the university with, as he would use an identifying signal technique emitted by the implanted chip. He could operate doors, lights, heaters, other computers without so much as lifting a finger. Now the professor has entered the second phase of the investigation. On March 14th, an operation was carried out at the Radcliffe Infirmary, Oxford, UK, to implant a microelectrode array into the median nerve of Professor Kevin Warwick. This new custom-built implant should be able to send back signals, actually two-way, between the professor's nervous system and a computer. Both movement and sensory signals are to be investigated along with attempts to measure signals associated with physical emotions like anger, shock, excitement. This is the world's first operation of this type, and coming up in a moment, we've got him on the line from Great Britain. Here is Professor Kevin Warwick from Great Britain. Professor, welcome back to the program.
Cheers, Art. Nice to be here again.
Great to have you. Just before we get started, Professor, I heard that, of course, we have daylight savings time here, too, which I think is insanity. We should have it all year long, but we're going to have to spring forward the clocks here this coming Sunday. And someone earlier today told me, when they were setting up the interview with you for tonight, that You folks in Great Britain change your clocks a week before we do.
Yeah, I think there's 9 hours difference now. We went ahead of the game, I think. No idea why that is. I know I was glad we sorted it out, otherwise I'd have been sitting on the end of the phone for about an hour and there'd been nothing coming through.
But that's the damnedest thing I ever heard of. I mean, it's bad enough that we change the clocks, but we're not even doing it evenly with our best friends, the Brits.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy, but, I don't know. Maybe we'll have the day soon where we don't bother with all these time differences. We just operate the world on one time or something like that. I think with the internet and the world connections, it's probably possible.
Well, all right. So when we last talked, you know, you've got to imagine tonight that there are those who did not hear the first program we did.
Yeah.
Certainly there are. And you, for some time, have had an implant in you which could sort of, I don't know, turn on lights without clapping and close doors or do whatever, right?
Yeah, you were mentioning the applied digital solutions thing. I mean, in a sense, it was something very much like that. It didn't operate in exactly the same way, but it was an identifying chip, as you described earlier. And we'd got the computer in the building here, a cybernetics building at Reading University, set up. So as I walked through different doorways, it knew where I was. And we had it actually monitoring. It knew when I went into a room, when I left a room, exact timings. But we got it opening doors for me, switching off the lights, and coming through the front door, it said, "Hello, Professor Warwick." So
I see. Well, now, I've got thinking about that. And while I wouldn't want to ask about your personal situation, do you think the average guy would want to have his wife monitoring the internet, let's say, watching whichever room her husband was in, you know, 25 miles away?
Well, I don't know. There's always the big brother issue, like you're saying, whether it's a person's wife or husband, because women could have chips like this as well.
Well, that's true.
But also computers monitoring. I think there is a worry that aspect of it, but again, with smart cards and the sort of credit cards we have now, in a sense, it's more looking at it that way. And hence, I would say, as well as there being potential worrying aspects, there are potential positives that you could use something like this as a very safe credit card, something that is not going to get stolen. You're not going to lose it.
Well, how do you take this news? In other words, our FDA here in America has basically said it's none of their business. And so they've said, go ahead, you know, so this company is going to get to go ahead, and I guess that means everybody gets to go ahead, that it really has nothing at all to do with the FDA, period.
Yeah. Well, I can see quite why. If a person is willing to have something implanted, I understand it now. It's quite a simple, or relatively simple injection. Mine at that time, this is now 4 years ago, required a minor surgery. It wasn't particularly painful, but there was local anesthetic involved, so it was a little bit more serious. But now technology's moved on.
By the way, how is your chip powered?
Well, that one was powered, it had a little induction coil. I think this is similar to the ADS system. So it doesn't have a battery or anything in it, and you need to pass, put a bigger coil nearby, which you have in a barcode reader, or we have in various doorways here at Reading.
Uh-huh.
And quite simply, the bigger coil induces electricity in the smaller coil, which is in the coil of wire, that is, which is in the implant itself. So that provides, by induction, it was magnetic induction. A guy called Michael Faraday discovered it.
Oh, yes, I'm quite well aware of what it is. Is there any storage capacity at all within it?
Not with that one, no. The only sense there was is that we could reprogram the code that it was transmitting.
I meant electrical storage. In other words, once you had the inductor nearby, would any excess energy be stored to keep the chip going once you got out of range?
Not that way that we got it set up. No. It was just at that moment you had the energy. It could transmit signals. It could receive signals at that time. But once you moved out of range, that's it.
Gotcha.
And I think that's the same with the ADS thing. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's the same.
Okay. So then, after you have had plenty of experience with that chip in you, you recently, I know, decided to have this operation,
yep,
which is pretty complex. And basically, you have, well, now that it's over, the operation has happened, but the intent of the operation was to do what?
Yeah, well, it did take quite a bit of time to bring about, both technically and getting through ethics committees and things like that. So a lot of paperwork involved. But the main intent is to link my nervous system with the computer, either by literal hard wire. So literally the one possibility is with wires that go from my nervous system into the computer, or, which is the more usual route that we'll be using, and that is we've got a radio transmitter pack, so mainly it'll be connecting my nervous system to the computer by radio.
So they had to take basically all of these wires and rip open. Surgeon wouldn't say rip open, but open up your arm and get to the nerves and wire into the nerve. Something you thought was going to be about an hour's worth of operation, if I recall.
Yeah, I was guessing at an hour from what they'd said, but of course it was the first time this operation had ever been carried out, so there were an awful lot of unknowns. Even the surgeon was guessing, well, we'll try it this way, but it lasted just over 2 hours in the end, so it was one hell of an experience. I just had local anesthetic, although it was a regional, from my elbow down to my hand, so I could still move my fingers around, still feel with me, which was important.
Now, I recall also that you said that you expected a strong possibility you would lose part of the control of your hand.
That's right. That's right. The moment in the operation when there's an array of 100 pins, essentially, which make a hardwire connection to the nerve fibers. And the moment before that was fired in, the surgeon checked with me, okay, you ready for this? And it's one of those moments in your life that you know, I was there, okay, I'd built up for this for several years, but he's about to fire it in and you think, well, this is it.
When you say fire it in, what do you mean? 100 connections? How do you fire 100 connections at once?
Well, it's on a little array. It's on like a hairbrush, but much, much smaller, obviously. And then the whole array is fired in one go, with a sort of miniature pneumatic drill.
Oh, you're kidding. Bang. You mean, so if you could picture this, a little tiny, millions of little brushes, little connection points, yep. and it's fired in to the nerve. How do they match, or do they just assume that they're going to get X number of connections to the nerve firing it in?
Well, that's what we're about. I mean, it's very much into the unknown. Medical research in this area, people maybe tend to think, oh, we know about how all the nerves work. And very little is known. And one thing we're hoping to do is actually move things on a little bit by having...
Professor, that's kind of like firing a shotgun.
Yeah, well, very much so, yeah, yes. So, I mean, it was at that time, it was very much, maybe I could have lost at that instant a lot of movement or sensations in my fingers, thumb, and so on.
So he said, are you ready?
Yeah.
You said?
I said, go for it.
Go for it. And they fired away, and then I suppose first thing they did is say, try to move something, right? Wait a minute, you had an anesthetic, so you couldn't.
I had local around where the connection was, but I still could move my fingers or thumbs. So most of my fingers and thumbs were still free to move and feeling there.
Did you feel any immediate difference?
Oh yeah. Not difference in the sense of loss of feeling or so on, but when he fired it in, yeah, there was a sort of like a bolt of electricity running down thumb and finger and so on. So
wow,
like a mini electric shock, I guess.
Oh wow. Okay.
And to be honest, I mean, jumping ahead, we talk more about the operation, but jumping ahead over the last few weeks since then. I get occasional zings, as it were. I don't know how else to describe it, but sort of electrical impulses that sort of shoot down a finger. It's not painful at all. In fact, from a scientific point of view, it's quite exciting.
What do you think that means? Do you think that means that there are nerves attaching to the electrodes, we'll call them?
Oh yeah, I would think in a way it's not knowing really, but
yeah, that's right.
There's that. I think there's the possibility simply of the connection settling in and the nerves regrouping. But there's also, because I've got a connector pad linked to the outside, so I mean it might be picking up some static or something like that, and I'm literally getting signal picking up radio stations or something like that. I don't know.
Is the entire apparatus contained within you now, or is there an external portion?
There is an external. When we were actually developing it, at one time we were looking to go for a complete implant, so everything would be self-contained, which
yes.
I think from a medical point of view is the preferred option long-term.
Right.
But really, scientifically and medically, it's very much a step into the unknown. And hence we needed most of our electronics on the outside so we could try it out and, it's not working as well as we hoped. Let's change something. Let's modify it. Let's try this instead of that. And if it was implanted, of course, we'd have to open my arm up every time we wanted to try it. So we've got some inside and some outside.
So
I've got literally a connector pad. There's some wires coming out of my arm and I've got a connector pad which then we connect up to our interface unit from time to time.
How long did you wait after the operation until you hooked it up the first time?
Oh, to be honest, it was a couple of weeks. The surgeon wanted he was in control of the situation. And he wanted at least 1 week before he was happy that everything, just from a medical point of view, that it looked as though it was healing up, that it looked as though there was no rejection, that in particular that there wasn't any sign of infection getting in.
Of course.
And that was the critical thing, I think, because we got wires coming out. The big, big worry was that if you get some infection around the point where the wires come out of the body, it
right.
can just zip down those wires like wildfire and get straight into the nerves. And then, you know, you're into a dead hand time. The whole hand could just stop. You get all the nerves infected directly. Because the nerve fibers have this sheath, a coating around them, which I suppose we've evolved for protection.
What would happen if that occurred? I mean, is that a fatal possibility, or is it what?
Well, I suppose that there is that possibility.
I mean, the surgeon must have sat you down and warned you about what the possibilities were.
Oh, sure. But I guess, again, because no one's done it before, there is that in the extreme case, but because no one's done it before, you're taking risks, but you don't really know what the risks are until you've done it. And here, I think infection getting down into the nerves, because we've broken through the covering, the sheath that covers the nerves, so we're opening up the nerves to possibilities of infection that
No.
haven't really been done before.
Well, you are now the world's first human cyborg. I mean, we've had cyborgs in science fiction, you know, for as long as I've been alive. But now, you actually are the world's first cyborg. How do you feel?
Oh, well, tremendously excited. From the point of view of scientifically, it's every day is an exciting day. One problem is because nobody's been there before, you don't know what to expect or what to feel with anything we're doing. So,
do you feel the machine in you in a way?
I rather not. I've just become instantly attached. I almost don't notice it's there.
Instantly attached. All right, Professor, hold on. We're rather instantly attached. Great line. The world's first human cyborg is my guest. And he is Professor Kevin Warwick. From the High Desert, I'm Art Bell. Stay right there.
Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
The first implant chips for human beings just got approved by the FDA today here in America. In Great Britain, they're far ahead of us. My guest, Professor Kevin Warwick, is the world's first cyborg. He just had an operation, an incredible, absolutely incredible operation. And we're just beginning to learn about it, so stay right where you are. Back across the land and the pond to the professor in Great Britain, Professor Kevin Warwick. Professor, you know, a really important first question for me is, do you now have full use of your arm and your hand?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. It's I do, certainly. No problem with it at all. I throughout the operation, Peter Teddy, the surgeon, every so often he would stop and say, can you still move your fingers? Can you still feel this? Can you still feel that? And I was delighted to be able to say yes all the time, and now it's been in for a while, and everything's fine.
And there's no, you can move your fingers as much dexterity as you always had, no reduction whatsoever?
Yeah, no problem at all. I'm still terrible on the piano, just as I always ever was. no problem. It's really, I mean, as I was saying before, when he fired the pins into it, I mean, it was at that moment that sort of you really feel in yourself, wow, this is it. It could be a dangerous moment. I could lose all sense of feeling and touch. But as it happened, it turned out okay.
Well, now, since those nerves are when they fired it in, which is kind of an odd term, when they fired it in, then obviously the local anesthetic didn't mean much to the nerve chain that went further up your arm into your body, right?
No, that's it. I mean, it seemed all right going back up to my brain. I didn't know that I had any, but of course the feelings were coming through from my fingers, so I suppose it was going both ways. It felt like a small electric shock when the array got fired in. I mean, as it happened, because it was a bit of a research thing in itself, the operation, when he had a first go with it, we hadn't quite got the system wired up right, and it didn't, I described it as a bit like a pneumatic drill hammering the things in, and it didn't actually work properly first time, so we had to have a go at it again. People think, oh, the operation's all scheduled and it goes ahead and there's no problems with it. That wasn't quite the case.
Well, you don't want to think, I wouldn't use the term pneumatic drill operation.
It's like a mini one, you know.
A small pneumatic drill. All right.
It was exciting being awake. I mean, having a general, I could have had a general, but I think it was important for me to be awake during the operation.
And I'll bet your surgeon felt the same way, too.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He could then ask me questions, how's that feel, what's that like, and so on. So.
So now you have how many wires that come out of you?
We've actually got 20. We've got 20 small, very, very small wires, and they come out onto a connector pad, which is about the array itself is positioned just up from my wrist. There's a 2-inch incision, which you were saying about cutting me open before. There's a 2-inch incision, and that's where the array's positioned on my median nerve. There's then a bunch of wires. The surgeon had to tunnel up my arm about 15 centimeters, and the wires actually come out a little bit down from the elbow. So,
wow.
I think if anybody's seen the film The Terminator, where Arnie Schwarzenegger opens up his arm and he's got all wires and things like that. I'm a bit like that at the moment. I've got a bunch of wires running up my arm.
Oh, wow. You know, it's interesting. Here in the desert, we have very low humidity, and when you walk across a rug and you touch somebody, you get a shock. I mean, even my little cats, you touch them, you get a big, both of us get a shock, you know?
Yeah.
Now, Great Britain is pretty humid, so you may not face that problem, but I was wondering, oh my God, I mean, what if somebody should shuffle across a rug and touch you at the wrong moment?
I think maybe, I mean, describing that, you're right with humidity, but I am scheduled next week, as it happens. I'm visiting University of Arizona. There's a...
Oh, you are? That could be a very dangerous trip.
we'll be able to report back as to what actually happened. there's a digital art symposium next Thursday and Friday.
In Arizona?
In Arizona,
Oh, yeah. You're going to be hopping around like a frog in a hot
frying pan. We'll see. You're putting me off now. I'll change my mind about it. we'll see scientifically if we prove you right or prove you wrong.
All right. Well, now...
interesting, actually.
You thought you felt a shock before. Anyway.
Yeah. Every day I do get the odd, first few days it was more, but I'd call them little zings. It's a sort of little...
little zings. Let me tell you how it is out here. You can get about an eighth of an inch spark that jumps between two human beings, or a human being and a piece of metal or a cat or whatever. And while it's, of course, very small amount of current, it's extremely high voltage, actually.
Yeah.
And if that were to connect with one of your wires.
Yeah, you're right.
I am.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, anyway.
only one way of finding out, that's for sure.
Have you yet attempted a crude interface to any of the wires with any sort of with your computer interface?
Yeah, we've actually looked at picking up signals, monitoring. We've not yet gone ahead with any putting signals down.
Right.
And the good reason for that is that because it's doing it for the first time, actually trying to make sense of in any shape or form and understand what the signals are all about is proving to be a little bit more of a challenge than we previously imagined.
So in other words, you hook up some of the wires to an interface, and you're looking at a computer readout, which is monitoring, I suppose, subtle voltage changes?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's literally on the nervous system. It's microvolts you're talking about.
I understand, but I mean, you, for example, would clench your fist, I guess, and then and watch for a reaction. Are you getting a reaction?
Oh yeah, clear as a bell. Yeah.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We've actually done it mainly the hardwired way. So with the wire, literally a wire connection to the computer.
Uh huh.
And I can safely say I've interfaced. That's for sure.
Oh my. What about other things? For example, if you are experiencing extreme discomfort or extreme joy or some extreme emotion. Do you believe you've seen that register?
We haven't tried anything like that yet. I mean, we certainly plan to, and I think from what we've seen so far, like you described earlier, sort of physical emotions. So the sort of thing when if I am to get excited and
right.
those signals appear, I feel my best guess is that we are going to see something. Again, getting some understanding of the signals, what the hell they all mean, is going to be quite a challenge. But yeah, I think we're going to see something. And certainly even if we don't understand the signals, we can take one thing and say, well, these set of signals relate to when Kevin's very excited. And then when we see the signals again, we can say, yeah, he's very excited.
Well, that's quite a rig you've got inside of you. Now, if at some point I feel that you have reaped as much benefit as you can from this particular experiment. Is it removable?
Oh yeah, the planet. Well, we hope. I mean, as far as I'm aware, this particular array has been put into animals before, non-human animals before. Not by me. I've not done anything like that. And when it's been removed, it's been terminal cases. So essentially, if a rabbit has had the array and then... After it dies, they take it out again. So I don't fancy for science going through that bit. I think that was... I have enough complaints from people saying, oh, he's only doing it for publicity.
I know better. Jamie in Oak... I get these computer messages while we're on the air. In Oakville, Ontario, up in Canada...
Yeah.
Says, Art, you know, few programs that you do upset me as much as implant ones. Beautiful wrapping for such an invasive and dangerous concept. Just think of what the government and corporate America could use this for. Unbelievable. Very unhappy with this kind of thing.
I think quite rightly. I think it is something that, and one reason we're doing it is probably to stir people's emotions so we can start discussing it. And it's great you're giving it airtime, because unless people understand what technology can do now, what is available, I mean, this is not science fiction we're doing here. This is science. This is actually having things connected to my nervous system, linking it to a computer.
I understand.
And it's important for people to look out. There are enormous positives to go with it for helping people with disabilities. But as your caller is saying there are enormous potential negatives. And unless people start discussing it, as perhaps people have been discussing the whole cloning issues and genetics, then things are going to go ahead behind closed doors and things might happen and we're not realizing it. What we're doing is open. We're saying this is what we're doing. So it's good that somebody's calling in and saying...
By the way, I don't know if you got the story, but Dr. Servino apparently in Dubai...
Yeah.
is announcing that the first human clone is 8 weeks along in the cooker.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
You and I talked a little bit about this in the last program, but here you go. I mean, the first human clone is less than 9 months away.
Yeah, and this is the problem. Like you're saying, Dubai.
Yes.
Different countries have different ethical regulations to go through before you can carry out particular investigations. And like we've done this in the UK. Whether we could do it in the US just yet, I don't know. Maybe now you can, because we're going through it. But there in Dubai, but potentially the ethical problems associated with doing something like that are a little bit different.
Yes. Even where you are in Great Britain, what were the ethical considerations and arguments, and then how did you finally get approval to do this?
Yeah, well, the first thing was the array that's actually fired in, because it's a one-off thing. It's just me we're trying on. We're not sort of trying it out on 50 volunteers or anything. Therefore, it's not considered to be a medical piece of technology.
That's exactly the way the EPA ruled here.
Right. Oh, there we go. Well, that's it. And that avoids a lot of committees if it's not that. So the only really ethical committees, the paperwork we had to go through, were at the hospital that we carry the operation out. Each hospital has an ethics committee. As it happens, we went through two hospital ethics committees for a double check. But that's the main ethical consideration. So there aren't, in fact, the overall ethical issues, which the caller from Ontario was pointing to. Should we be doing this sort of thing? Where's it going to go? There isn't really anybody to say yes or no. There's no international group that looks at that or anything like that. It's just really locally the hospital saying, medically, is this all right? Can the surgeon do it?
And so you went, I guess, before these two ethical boards.
Yeah.
Was there any dissent?
No, the one board just said, yeah, go ahead with it.
Uh-huh.
The other one, because the median nerve is the main bunch of nerve fibers going down from the brain to the hand, the thumb and fingers. And there are one or two more periphery nerves. The ulna actually operates on the smaller little finger. And there was a question there, well, are you sure you want to go for this main nerve? Because of the dangers associated. If something goes wrong, it could be pretty serious.
Yes.
But so we had to substantiate that the positive point with going through this nerve, because we're doing it to help a lot of people with spinal injuries, if we can move things forward in that area. And if we went for a lesser nerve, the results we felt would be in themselves much less. So in going for it, we thought it's best to go for the main one.
Well, how did you, out of curiosity, how did you justify the jump to a human, even yourself? In other words, there must have been an argument saying, why aren't we doing this at the animal level? Why do you feel that you, even doing it, you know, to yourself, have to move it this high a level?
Well, I think there have been quite a few animal studies now with this particular type of array. But of course, with any animal, a non-human animal that is, you don't really get the same sort of feedback. You can't really say, is that hurting, or how does it feel, or can you move your fingers around, or your claws, or whatever it is. And what does that feel like in terms of what are you sensing? And hence the whole investigations are very, very restricted. You don't even know whether the animal is in pain or not. I mean, it could be, and this was a big question for us.
That's true.
Okay, a chicken has an implant, and how does the chicken show pain? You don't know. And really, one of the things we're looking for on the positive side with this implant is the potential for use on people with spinal injuries. The prime popular example would be Christopher Reeve, that people know about, who his brain is fully functioning, but he's paralyzed from the neck down.
Yes.
And in the future, for people like him, can we at least restore some movement, or can they control their environment to a small extent? That would be the big hope, and that's really a key aim of what we're doing.
Do you think that any of this research will benefit Christopher Reeves in his lifetime?
My guess would be it could do, if he's willing to carry out. I mean, I would have thought that in the next few years, because this is working well, I can't see why not. Yeah. I mean, we're only, I would have thought within the next decade, what we're doing here should have some pilot studies at least carried out, which will be helping people. And I mean, for somebody like that, if he could just move a finger or two to pick up a cup or press a button or something for his dignity, for his ability,
yes, of course,
would be enormous.
What about, in his case, I guess, all of the, now I'm just stabbing around the dark here, but all of the nerves are severed, essentially. In other words, there's no transmission of information anywhere for anything, right?
And his is the worst case, right at the top of the spine.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. What I'm about to ask you about is, instead of putting in an external a device of some sort, what if, I mean, if you can essentially fire, as you put it, fire at these nerves and get some sort of connections, why shouldn't a person like myself imagine that you could do, well, if a wire is cut, Professor, you can make a splice. You can splice in a piece of wire and all of a sudden get a connection again. Why couldn't you imagine doing a splice? In other words, firing one set into the bottom set of nerves and one set into the top set of nerves.
Yeah, I think you can imagine that.
Really?
It hasn't been done yet. And hopefully, it's sort of bridge over, exactly that.
Kind of like a bypass.
Yeah, exactly. And the hope would be that maybe that will be possible in the next few years. Maybe pretty quickly. Yeah, I think we still have an awful lot to learn about the spine and nerves and so on. So I don't think we can imagine it's going to be a one for one, that each nerve can be connected up. But even if firing in an array like I've got, and then on the other end firing in an array lower down over the break.
Exactly.
I think that would bring about something, and it's certainly a very exciting way to go ahead, yeah.
Now, how likely is it that as time passes, all this array of connections that you liken to like a hairbrush, a teeny-weeny little hairbrush, will begin connecting to nerves? In other words, will begin forming connections that at the moment of the operation were not fully complete and sort of grow into it, as it were. Is that likely?
I think it is. Philip Kennedy's work at Emory, he had been working really with single electrodes with stroke victims, and there the results after a while implied very heavily that was going on. I tend to feel that probably what happens is if your body, particularly your brain, feels it is gaining something from this piece of technology, then it tends to go for it, and it may well grow together very much. If conversely it feels it's doing something negative, then it probably tries to reject it. So we're particularly excited about looking at giving me extrasensory input, which is one of the things we want to do, ultrasonic senses, which humans don't have. And then I think we may well see that the nerves start to link up more strongly with the technology, really become one with it.
Wow. All right. Well, that brings on many questions. In other words, when we get back, I'll be interested to know if I guess this is in parallel with your nerves. Not obviously, they haven't been broken, so it's in parallel, which means that the wires are also connected to the professor's brain. We'll be right back.
World was on fire, no one could save me but you. Strange world desire, make foolish people do. I never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you. And I never dreamed that I knew somebody like you. No, I don't want to fall in love. No,
light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day. You'll feel the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold.
so many people, but you've got no soul, and it's taking you so long to find out you're wrong when you thought it held everything. You used to think that it was so easy. You used to say that it was so easy, but you're trying
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
As of this last Sunday, it's a 9-hour spread to where Professor Kevin Warwick is. He's the first human cyborg in the world. And so we are spanning those 9 hours at the speed of light for you, and that's who we're interviewing. Think about that. The first at anything. How often do you get to be the first at anything? The first human cyborg. More in a moment. Stay right there. All right, back now to Great Britain and to Professor Kevin Warwick. Professor, I was thinking about this, and of course, in the case of somebody with a spinal cord severance or any nerve that is severed, you would go in with the kind of thing that you've got and shotgun fire at one of the severed ends, I suppose, in an early experiment. However, yep. In your case, essentially, you fired into a parallel situation because your nerves are all still connected both to your fingers and your arm and your brain on the other end, right?
That's exactly right. I didn't have there's no problem that I was trying to correct or anything like that. So I was firing directly into nerves that were fully functioning.
Okay. So the connections are not only melding themselves in the direction of your arm, but in the direction of your brain at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah, the nerves are a bit like a freeway to the brain, or in this case, from the brain down to the hand. That's exactly what it is. Very high speed route.
Now, do we know for a fact? We know so little about nerves. Do we know for a fact? And I know we touched on this in the last program, but it's so intriguing to me that the nerves that go or make their way from the brain to the hand and the arm are only pathways that have to do with the movement of the fingers and the arm and the articulation and all the rest of it, or is it somewhat possible that the neural connections that you're establishing that are going to your brain could deliver messages in a bidirectional manner that would have nothing at all to do with your hand or your arm?
Well, that's the thing, because as well as the movement, which is down from the brain to the fingers, you've got the route back as well, the touch and pain, all of those sensations, they're being delivered back up to the brain.
Yes.
And then there are some other nerves knocking around that nobody really knows what they're doing, whether it's sort of evolution and they were there for some other purpose or something, but what we want to do is tap into some of the sensory nerves, which are normally, which we hope we've got. We hope we've got some. We're finding that out at the moment. But instead of use them for touch, for feel, is to feed down ultrasonic signals. We have a bunch of robots that use ultrasonics, which is a bit like a bat senses the world, a high-frequency sound. Humans don't have that sense. But we want to feed down onto the nerves the output from those sensors. So to try to give me an alternative sense directly to my brain. And that's where we'll really be looking at the point you're making there. You know, can we feed in different information directly to the brain and get the brain to hopefully make sense of it, make use of it?
Well, if that happens, then then, Professor, you are really in the Twilight Zone.
Well, yeah, but for real.
Yeah, that's right, for real. Yeah. No, I meant for real. I mean, you're really in the Twilight Zone, because then all of a sudden you could begin, I mean, potentially at the far end of the possibilities at this, you could begin to interface with a computer in a way that no human being on the planet would even have a clue about, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure, yes, yes. I mean, we're looking at some specific signals there, ultrasonics, that we know what they're about, and that my brain hopefully can make some sense of them, but of course it's looking at a whole range of signals, maybe signals that, you know, nothing like have been on the nervous system before. What the brain is going to make of those signals, I mean, I think when we get towards the end of the experiment, we'll probably try a few weird things, you know, as long as I'm still okay for it, we'll try a few weird signals and see what happens.
Mark in Tempe, Arizona, expresses the view of others when he says, freedom means nothing without privacy. No matter what the benefits, it is a step toward the ultimate invasion of privacy. Imagine if you needed such positive ID to buy or sell, Hitler would have cheered. That's, of course, again, the downside of, you know, this kind of thing. And what do you say to these critics? I'm sure you get email and stuff from them, don't you?
Yeah, to be honest, 99% of emails is very positive and questions about what we're doing, that
yes.
sort of stuff. So
of
it
course,
isn't
yes.
the minority, but it is an issue. I mean, in a way, the telephone was an invasion of privacy. It sort of made the world smaller and people
true.
Could... And this really I see along those lines. I'm not connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. At the moment, I can choose when I'm connected and when I'm not.
At the moment, yes.
At the moment, yeah. When I am connected, yeah, it's a different matter. It's linking myself up to the computer. If the computer is linked to the internet and the web, then it is opening things up in that route. I think if the previous caller referring to the possibility of governments and so on being very intrusive, and maybe implanting people against their will and having them connected up all the time, that is a different matter. And that, for sure, I think the caller there saying that it's an invasion on privacy, I would agree completely. There are all sorts of ethical questions and issues
yes,
here.
Yes, well, then how do you begin drawing the lines as the technology marches forward, thanks to people like yourself, and you get to the point where you have to draw those lines, how do you draw them?
Well, it's a difficult line to draw. It's only society, maybe, and society is different in different countries. Even what I was describing, an extrasensory input, an ultrasonic input, for me, it's something extra. Humans don't have that. It's sort of upgrading humans, and you might think, oh, that's negative. We shouldn't be doing that. But on the other hand, for somebody who's blind, then it could be good, not to repair their blindness, but to give them a different sense, to help them to move around. So you say, well, should somebody be able to have this because they're blind and somebody else not because they're not blind? It's a very, very difficult line to draw. And it, as with the genetics and cloning, they're enormous issues, positives and negatives at the same time.
Yes, well, then who would be the one or the group to most properly decide and then regulate on all of this? Would this be in private hands, would you think? Would it be by necessity a decision made by the government, legislated or in the parliament there, whatever? I don't know. I mean, who?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would have, whatever it is, it would have to be an international body. I can't see one government regulates that may act against itself as a country, because if other countries are going ahead, and you end up with the military particularly working with soldiers that are upgraded, they have extra senses, you know, maybe they have infrared senses, they could have a bit of a one-up on the opposition, and particularly when we look ultimately at direct connections to the brain and the possibilities of upgrading memory capabilities and in particular communicating directly from the brain, which I see as a distinct possibility. If some countries have regulated against that and other countries have said, well, it's all right by us, then it's giving those countries quite an edge. So I think it has to be international, which means a big sign-up by all countries, which is a very, very difficult thing to bring about.
Well, maybe your experiments will drive us toward talking about that. I guess that's what this is all about.
That's right. I hope so. I hope so. We have to talk about it. It has to be raised. There are enormous moral and ethical issues here, much, much greater than the cloning issues, I feel. And we've got to start talking about them because the technology is with us.
If the wildest thing happens and you find out that the neural pathways mate and mate, as that develops and as you hook yourself finally in a bidirectional manner to a computer, professor, and you find out that your neural pathways to your brain are capable of transmitting information that would have nothing to do perhaps with the movement of your hand or your arm, but just directly to your brain, and you begin to experience an actual interface with a computer.
Yeah.
That is such a wild, unimaginable thing. I'm sure you've thought about it.
That's right. Well, I'm at the moment tremendously excited about it, but also, as you might imagine, extremely tense. I mean, there's the scientific part of me that says, well, yeah, this is fantastic. We've got to see, which has been going all through the experiment, which overcomes the dangers that are involved. But on the other hand, it's a very tense thing. It's a very scary thing, as it were, because you just don't know. We try it out, and if it's changing you physically a little bit, it's one thing. But if it's changing you mentally, then it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, but that's the ballpark you're in.
Oh, very much so. Very much so, yes. I mean, it is for those around me, and I guess myself, the mental changes are a very worrying one because the brain is quite an adaptable thing. It changes in itself, but this way we're sort of enforcing changes onto it, and you might change one aspect of it, but that has repercussions elsewhere in the brain, and you have all sorts of side effects which may not be exhibited immediately, but may appear in years to come.
Exactly. How's your wife doing?
Oh, she's just fine. She's been great, absolutely brilliant, which I've needed somebody, a shoulder to lean on and so on. And over the whole period before the operation, we were up and down. Is it happening? Isn't it happening? We had a few delays here and there, as you might imagine. And then the operation itself, she was extremely supportive.
Was there ever a moment when she came to you and said, look, Kevin, I don't know?
Oh, I think, regularly, a while back. I mean, she's known that it's been a scientific drive for me to carry this out, and hence she, I suppose at first, are you sure, you know what you're doing, it could mean, and some of the issues you're raising, it could mean that mentally you're changed, are you want to go through that? And it's the same with my family asking those questions. But she's known for some time, yes, we're going for it. And so she's been sharing with me the feelings when there's been a delay due to some paperwork or there's been a problem with the technology and it's delayed us. And she's known that that's, I don't know, it's affected everything in our lives. So she's been extremely supportive.
Well, you mentioned you've got 18-20 wires coming out just below the elbow there.
That's right, yeah.
How does she react to that? I mean, is it like, honey, those wires look actually handsome on you? Or...
it's not every husband that has a bunch of wires coming out.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's my point.
I mean, if I wasn't married, it would be a wonderful chat-up line, wouldn't it? Do you want to see my implant? I mean, not everybody can say that. But I mean, sometimes she forgets they're there, and she grabs hold of my arm or knocks it, and she's panicking in case they knock the wires out of place. So.
Uh-huh.
It's just part of me and part of what we're doing now. So.
Yeah, you're right. If you weren't married, boy, I'll tell you. Here, hon, hold these two wires.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, boy. Would you like to experience a real interface with a computer? I mean, I guess the answer must be yes. You wouldn't have gone through this, but do you think you would like to have it go that far, Professor?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think we've got an awful lot to learn. And this investigation we're going through, we're learning every day. It's, I mean, it really is so exhilarating from a scientific point of view to sort of go past the cutting edge or go past the frontiers and to not know what you're going to expect from when you do something. You just don't know. Nobody's done it before. But the whole thing in the years ahead of a full interface, a full connection, for sure, I really feel, and not only from human to computer, but a much closer connection from human to human as well.
Through a computer.
Yeah, the computer would be just like a telephone network connects one human to another in terms of speech. So the computer network, the internet, to connect people from nervous system to nervous system and brain to brain. So I think there's an awful lot we can do just by thinking about it.
Yeah, you talk about post-humans. What kind of society post-humans would live in? What do you mean by what do you mean by post-humans? You mean you or your successors? What do you mean?
Well, I think different people mean different things by it. I think there are some more philosophical views of it. My own view would be that the cyborg, an upgraded human with capabilities, I would see it more from the mental side, not the the $6 million man type thing with physical capabilities, but more with much, much more mental capabilities, and the post-human would be that, simply cyborgs that have the ability to communicate by thinking to each other, have different senses that humans don't have, and because they have a brain linked to a computer, have the power of thinking in many, many dimensions, which humans are very much restricted to thinking in three or four dimensions.
So in other words, ultimately, you could imagine with a high bandwidth connection, an interface to a human brain, which would mean that the brain would be on the internet.
Essentially,
the brain would be on the internet, right?
That's it, exactly. But thinking of it as a brain on the internet is perhaps a better way of looking at it, is that your brain and the internet become one.
Well, that's even a more worrisome way of looking at it.
It is more worrisome, yeah.
That you would be in... God, in a way, you would be inside the internet, or the internet would be inside of you. I'm not sure how to say it.
Yeah, you'd be like a node on the network, which, I mean, we haven't connected this up yet to the network.
But you're going to, aren't you?
We're going to. We're not going to tell people just before we do it, but sure. So certainly my nervous system will be linked up to the internet. That's definitely on the cards in the weeks ahead, yeah. And that will be a weird experience in itself.
Whew.
The sort of signals we were talking about, movement and sensory, we want to try playing across the internet. Oh, hopefully between UK and USA. So
I know. I was actually hoping you would have already been hooked up and would have a password for me, you know, so I could.
Yeah, so press a button and my finger starts waggling around. Yeah. Well, that's seriously what we're looking to do. So again, it's not all something in science fiction. That's what we've got on the cards in the next few weeks. I can't see any. There's no technical reason why that won't work, unless there's.
Oh, I'm certain you're going to go right ahead with it, Professor. Yeah. I can tell. Stand by. Hold it right where you are. I'm Art Bell. Time. See what's become of me and the professor.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
You've gone too far when the bullet hits bone, that's for damn sure. Morning, everybody. Getting information that there's just been an earthquake, a small one, relatively small one, Palm Springs, California, about half an hour ago. 4.5 on the Richter scale would appear felt in a fairly wide area. Indio felt it certainly. So I'm getting a lot of messages that the ground is shaking nearby here in California. No big surprise. Jumping ahead now, Professor, there was once a book and I think a movie that followed it called The Forbin Project, and I bet probably you saw it or read it or something. Anyway, it really took it on out to the point where machines became the masters of humans.
Yep.
To the degree, and there was an interesting story in the last newscast. You know, the head of the New York Stock Exchange was talking about how disruptive 911 was to their communication. You know, September 11th destroyed their communications.
Yep.
And how they're taking steps now to protect, and they're worried about hackers and all. What should we, you know, what would happen if a hacker ever got into the New York Stock Exchange, that sort of thing.
Yep.
The Forbin Project, it got to the point where a machine decided that the folly of human endeavor and human war and human behavior was going to lead to human extinction, and it began to take steps based on pure logic.
Yep.
That's not all that really outlandish, is it?
Not at all. In 1998, I had a book. I don't think it's out in the US, unfortunately, but in the UK and just about everywhere else in the world, called In the Mind of the Machine. And that was really scientifically looking at the possibilities of exactly that, how it could come about and so on. I think the idea, though, that machines necessarily use logic that we would regard as straightforward human logic, even that is not necessarily the case. I think with machines nowadays, computer-based machines, they learn, they can adapt, and hence come up with their own conclusions based on their own logic.
Maybe so, Professor, yeah. But let's look at this. We've got, 5 or 6 billion human beings on the planet now?
Yep, yep.
Isn't it entirely possible? I mean, we are human, so
yeah.
we're not likely to say, except the very lowest of us or the highest of us, depending on how you look at this, that there need to be less humans and something has to be done immediately to control the population. Well, a machine might come to the same conclusion about the available resources versus the number of consumers, and it could make a fairly radical, arbitrary decision if you were to instruct a machine to act in the best interests of human beings, you see, might decide the best interest of human beings would be that there weren't so many of them.
Oh, quite right. And we, as humans, I think we're driven along very much by short-term goals often, and often personal goals. And quite a few countries have problems with populations that are really exploding at the moment, and it's very difficult for them to apply any overall long-term goals and seeing where everything's going. I think we are very, very bad at looking at the long term and saying, oh, in long term, even in terms of 5-10 years, never mind next year or so on.
Well, we might not be really good at that, but machines might be really good at that.
Oh, for sure. And probably have an intellectual capability of looking ahead a bit more accurately than we can.
Yes,
so,
yes. And then if they're interfaced to the Internet, for example, they might have the capability of actually acting at some point to implement what they had decided. Now, it's a strong word, decided, but I mean...
No, that's fine. I'm happy with that, and I think it's perfectly possible. All the time we are deferring to computers for decisions much, much more, and allowing the computer network to not only make the decision, but carry out or implement in some way. I don't think we've quite got to the stage that we're talking about here, but...
No, we haven't, but here's the problem.
Yeah.
The Internet was built by scientists.
Yeah.
It was built in order to communicate no matter what would happen. In other words, you could destroy Chicago, L.A., New York. The Internet would still keep trucking along because it's like a giant neural bunch of connections. And
we can't switch it off. This idea, if the computer's getting dangerous, we just have to switch it off. That's a complete fallacy.
Yes, that's all wrong, isn't it? You know, just pull the plug. Well, you can't just pull the plug.
No.
There's a million plugs. You just can't do it.
Yeah, you might be able to pull one individual plug somewhere, but that's it. You've just... there's just one thing. There are millions upon millions of other plugs that you've got no opportunity. And that's true for everyone. No, I think there's no way of switching the Internet off realistically.
Well, they're going down the road now of these new computers,
not supercomputers.
No. These are little tiny things that are going to be the future of computers, and it won't come to me at the moment what they are.
People can phone in with the answer. That's the quiz. Anybody phones in with the right answer.
Quantum, thank you.
Quantum computers.
Yeah, it just occurred to me. Quantum computers. And when we get to that stage, the speed is going to be so enormous that it's not really all that hard to... I'm not sure exactly what consciousness is. It's probably a factor of storage and speed.
Yeah, you can start to look at human consciousness, but then there's also the potential for machine consciousness, and for us to say, this machine is not conscious, therefore we don't have to worry about it. I think that is so crazy as to be, we should ignore that straight away. Just like saying this bat or this cow is not conscious. It's a creature that's living in a different way from what we are. And we know that computers have, in the way they operate, a lot of advantages over humans.
Yes.
The memory capabilities, the speed that you're referring to, the accuracy, the repeatability. There are so many things that we know for sure. How many other things? Communication is another thing. I think technology has an enormous advantage over humans.
Well, if you accept that speed and storage are the two things that when they reach some juncture, some point, there will be consciousness, then you could almost sit down, it seems to me, and compute how far ahead in speed and storage one would have to get to where potentially consciousness could occur. In other words, where neural function approximates that of a brain of something or a human.
Yeah, but again, it's a different thing, and therefore I don't know that it has to approximate that as a human. It's more when it's got the power and we've deferred to it enough that it can make some decision and carry out some decision that, in a sense, from a human point of view, is irreversible. We can't stop it. We can't switch it off. And it has a profound effect on humanity of the type you were talking about. It decides, we're going to cut off the supplies of food in this area, and there's nothing we can do about it. It's carried out. Or we are suitably convinced, suitably at the, not slaves, but we feel we have to do it. Otherwise, we're not going to have the machines working in the way that we want them to. And I think...
I've watched science for a long time, and it plunges right ahead, just the way you have done what you've done with this operation. Science just goes ahead.
We debate.
Yeah. We're out here in the public debating about it, but it goes ahead anyway.
Yep.
And so... how do we avoid going down that road?
Well, I guess that's my route is the scientific route and is looking at the cyborg alternative. It's rather than having machines acting against you, it's saying, hey, there are all these advantages. Why don't we link up? Why don't we've got to admit it's going ahead, as you say. So why can't we team up? If you can't beat them, join them. Become cyborgs. Upgrade humans. Give ourselves extra capabilities by linking up with the technology much more closely.
Certainly that is one way to look at it, that you're upgrading like you would a program 4.2 to 4.3 to 5. Yep. Point whatever. Yeah, oh my. Well,
and we have to admit humans have a bunch of abilities. We sense the world in certain ways. Our brain is of a certain size. There's nothing technically wrong with something having more senses, having a much more powerful brain, and certainly evolution would point to that happening in the future. It just, with technology, it really has the potential there to really speed up evolution, really whiz it forward.
Well, that's an interesting concept, that we could be responsible for our own evolutionary jump.
Yeah. Huh. Self-determination by evolution, yeah. Well, I would see it as a distinct possibility, but once again, from society as a whole, it raises enormous moral, ethical questions, and I guess religious questions when one looks at it.
Would you, for example, one can easily imagine, either through the kind of hookup you have or a more complex one in the future,
yeah.
An actual interface to a computer and then to another human being, so that, for example, you could have downloaded into you the thoughts and experiences of another person on the other side of the world. In other words, you would be, it'd almost be like a Star Trek thing where you were suddenly throw a switch and you're in a different world altogether.
I think it is completely blurring the whole issue of what's real and what's not, because, I mean, through our normal sensory route, the human brain is just trying to make sense of the messages that are coming in. If you start throwing other messages at it through another route, then it's going to try and make sense of those in a different way. And if they are either simulated messages or messages, as you say, from another human, somewhere else in the world, then it will try and make sense of them in its own way. So, okay, it's maybe not next year or the year after, but the possibilities of signaling, certainly emotional, when you're feeling excited, I think that's not far off at all, that being blasted from one person to another. Again, it's all sorts of questions. What does the other person make of it? Will their brain feel excited in the same way, or will it simply not be able to cope with the signals, and then subsequently feeding in perhaps some memories, perhaps some certain little game playings or different experiences. We'd have to say that's a possibility. I don't think we need to understand fully how the human brain works before that happens, but it's really giving the human brain a port, a communication route to the outside world, to the internet and so on in that way.
Wouldn't it be the perfect torture mechanism? I mean, for example, I find the right two wires and hook you up to a game of Pong, you know, and just leave you alone for a while.
You're right. There's the other side of it all. Yeah, quite right. Yeah, there's all sorts of other tortures as well. I think watching Dallas or Dynasty or something hour after hour, and you're forced to do it. That might.
That's the real world now for sure.
Yeah.
You've done a lot in robotics, and we did touch on this in the last program, but robotics has not lived up to its promise. I mean, when I was a child, we were reading about robots and that we'd have them serving us and, oh, gee whiz, you know, the dishes would be done and all the drudgery work and the garbage would go out without the wife saying a word and robots would be helping us, and we're not there.
No, it's gone another way. It's gone the internet route. There are some robots that walk around, the Honda group of robots, P3 and Asimo, which is a bit like a child, physically they look something like humans, and it is amazing when you see them moving around. You think it's somebody inside a robot suit, but they are in fact robots, and they're physically mimicking what humans do, but not mentally in any way. And they have cost millions of dollars to put together. So, I don't know, there are sociological questions. Do people really want a human type of robot, a bit like, what was that film? There was a film recently with, I can't remember the guy, but a robot potential operating around the home and so on, or in the film AI, I guess, a robot that's something like a human. Would we actually want that? But technically, we do seem to be way, way off something like that.
If you are successful beyond all belief and you get a connection to your brain, interface to a computer that you didn't expect, a very full kind of connection,
would you
quickly back away from that? And how would you treat that if all of a sudden your entire brain came alive with a whole new reality, which was coming from a computer, which you plan to hook up to, I know. Would you immediately disconnect and go, uh-oh?
This is a big question. We've got a team of guys here ready, but it's dependent on my reaction, I guess. So if there is something that's extremely painful, a big negative, then the hope is that I will still be mentally capable of either saying to someone, okay, switch it off, cut it off, or doing it myself, even if physically I can't actually operate something with my hand.
But I mean, if you just suddenly realize, forget the pain. Let's say it's not pain. Let's just say that you're immediately overwhelmingly immersed in a cyber world, a whole new world.
Yep.
Would you attempt to disconnect immediately, or do you think you're so much scientist you'd sit there and let it happen?
Oh, I'd go for it. Yeah, I'd go for it. If the experience would be absolutely incredible. And the thing is, you don't know, could you repeat it? I mean, you might have through just a particular circumstance gained that experience, which would be fantastic, and it might not be something, if you switched it off, you could repeat immediately. So it would be to go for it. Yeah,
and then there's this: if there is that kind of connection, as you point out, you might not get it again, so you would sit there and immerse yourself into it. But then there's a lot of questions about, once that kind of connection has occurred, Professor, if the software should crash, if the machine should be turned off.
Yeah, the psychological aspects of suddenly being pulled out of it, which I know for people in the virtual world, in virtual reality, some people are able to cope nipping in and out and cope with it very easily, but other people experience all sorts of problems in terms of sickness, and even for days afterwards can have problems readjusting. So it's a big unknown. One would hope I'll be all right, but again, it might not be something that's immediate. There may be immediate shock coming suddenly back into the real world, but I guess without going down that route, you just don't know.
Okay, again, these wires that come out from below your elbow, they deal in hardly measurable amounts of voltage or current, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, fine. That goes to your brain. I asked you about the shock question. What about a sudden amount of voltage applied directly to those wires in some manner by accident? I mean, sure, this has occurred to you.
That's something we're really worried about. as you might imagine, I mean, you've got the voltage, and it has some effect on movement, that it might cause sudden movement of fingers and so on. But it's the other way. What happens when that heads on up to your brain?
Well, exactly right. I mean, you can take a little 9-volt battery and you can put it on your tongue, and you can just barely feel the voltage. It's like a little tickle.
Yep,
but
yep.
9 volts across a couple of your wires going straight to your brain.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole different thing. Yeah, yeah. And that is, with the whole of this, it's running on a bit of a knife edge as far as what we're doing, because again, nobody's experienced those sort of things before. So, I mean, maybe what you're suggesting there, going on the right pathway, could be pretty cool. It could be fun. But maybe it could be extremely dangerous.
You got a nine volt battery hanging around?
I'll go and try it in the lab now.
No, don't do that. Stay right there, though. We've got another hour to do. Professor Kevin Warwick, the world's first human cyborg. I'm Art Bell.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
I thought it was absolute genius of Keith to pick Phaedra as the 100 millionth visitor to the website last night. The unlucky Greek goddess Phaedra. What a great code name that was. I'm Art Bell. The professor will be right back, and we're about to go to phones. Once again, from Great Britain, here is Professor Warwick. Professor, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Al.
A lot of people want to talk to you, but a lot of people are fast-blasting me, asking you about the movie Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
You saw that, of course.
Yeah.
One in which an entirely artificial world... the world had been wrecked, and I forget, some kind of disaster, but some totally artificial world was imposed on every human being, or mostly every human being, and they ran it, and they told us what kind of world we were living in, even though it was actually devastation we were living in. Is that within the realm?
Oh, very much. I must admit, various people before I saw the film had said, hey, you've got to go and see this because it's not too far away from the sort of things you're talking about. And when I went to see it, I thought, yeah, this is great. The only thing that I was disappointed by about the last 10 minutes of the film became pure Hollywood. I think Keanu Reeves was down and out and that was it. And then all of a sudden he got some mystical powers from somewhere. I think they needed everybody to go home happy and content that everything was all right. So I was all right until about the last 10 minutes. Then if you cut that out, then fine. Yeah, there's very much that sort of world that I think is a distinct possibility, realistically.
That would... Well, all right. To even contemplate such a thing is...
I think there are some science fiction, the fantasy side of things. That's a different thing altogether, but quite a bit of the science fiction based on science is a guess as to what might happen in the future. And some of it you have to take out of films like Terminator, books like Neuromancer. Maybe some of it is not going to come about. I think things like time travel are still big questions, but
oh, yes,
certainly in terms of intelligent machines and robots and what's possible when you hook humans up to computers to technology, because our brains are the whole thing of what we're about. They make an understanding of what we see and what we're about and so on. And if you start changing the signals in the brain, you change what the human understands and what thinks going on.
Okay, one thing is clear, Professor. We are a warrior people. We're a warrior people. I mean, there's a war going on in the Middle East now. There's one going on in Afghanistan. There's really wars going on all over the planet. We fight with each other and kill each other.
Yep.
When you take the kind of technology that you are now, and you project it into the future, and you infuse it with war, what do you see?
Oh, well, I mean, there's definitely a technological war that we're looking forward to, technological warfare, and that, I think, is not too distant future. So I suppose removing the human from the front line, but also removing the human from a lot of the decision-making, that's what I would see. So, I mean, already I know McDonnell Douglas and Boeing are both putting together fighter planes without human pilots on board.
Right.
Simply because the technology outperforms humans when they're piloting it. The humans are too slow to assess a situation, to react. So a technological war, and then you're down to which side has got the better technology.
So you could imagine a war in which machines fought machines, and the best technological nation won.
That's it. And then the question is, well, what happens when one side has won? What do those machines do as far as the humans that are on the other side?
The losing side.
The losing side. What value do they put on the humans on the losing side? What do they value them at all? Or has part of their goal been to remove or destroy those humans, which is part of warfare?
All right, let's go to some phone lines. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Professor Kevin Warwick in Great Britain. Remember, there's a slight delay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Art. This is Deb from KSFO in Oakland, California.
Oakland, yes.
And my question, oh, gosh, I have such respect for you. I swear I've been walking around all day talking about I was going to listen to this program talking to the first cyborg of the human race. And I just feel so honored. I know that sounds strange, but here we are, you know.
You're talking now, yeah.
Great. It's kind of great. So anyway, my question is, do we know what frequency we would correspond with electronically or even electromagnetically? I mean, I know that scientists know how we resonate, but, I mean, are you being extra careful that you're buffering yourself or grounding yourself somehow or that you don't get blown out?
Yeah, it really is a good question, actually.
Yeah, it's a wonderful question because, I mean, it really is into the unknown. Sure, grounding, we're trying to make sure everything's all right, but things like static pickup, and then we've got differences between DC signals and AC. We're trying to make sure no DC gets down. But, I mean, what we're finding already, the signals we're looking at, there's all sorts of things going on at different frequencies, and it's one hell of a job trying to sort out what the hell does this mean, what does that mean. There's so much to learn. It's so exciting at the moment. We simply don't know it.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Now, Professor, here's another one for you.
Yeah.
I'm a ham operator.
Yeah.
And I operate a kilowatt rig over here, 1,000 watts.
Yep.
If you were to be in the vicinity of a transmitter of some sort, particularly an HF or UHF transmitter that might resonate, say, with the length of the lines that you've got now.
Yeah.
Oh, you could be in big trouble. I mean, have you said that you felt a few indecipherable signals, very sharp signals that could be radio stations or transmitters of some sort, or what about that consideration? I mean, you're going to get on, for example, an aircraft where there's all kinds of UHF transmissions going on, and what about you coming to Arizona? What about all that?
That's right. I mean, that'll be next week, and end of next week I'll be heading over there. I mean, it is simply unknown. We hope everything is going to be okay. I mean, there's going to be enough problems probably getting through the customs and through the X-ray machines.
I didn't even think about that.
But we, especially still with the September 11th, I think they've been a hell of a lot tighter after that. But you're right, pick up from here and there. I mean, I have to say, it's been now in place for 3 weeks, and I've had the connector pad outside my arm, it's there, so potentially it could have picked up this, it could have picked up that. Everything seems to be all right. What the little zings are, I think my best guess would be it's simply everything settling down. I don't think it's picking up something strange, but there's that possibility, yeah.
Have you been, in the weeks since the operation, have you been fairly isolated, you know, recovering, or have you been making the rounds?
I think something in between. The first few days I stayed fairly isolated, really with respect to the surgeon that had carried it out. He really, before we said anything to anybody about what we'd done, he really wanted to make sure everything was okay. So I guess the first week it was very much trying to stay at home and not wander out too much at all or when I went out.
Yeah.
But since then, it's very much out and about And hence, that's been one thing importantly for the implant, that I've been doing very much normal things with my left arm. I'm using it as an excuse not to do the garden and cooking and things like that, but, you know, I've got to have some benefits from it. But
there you are.
Apart from that, it's very normal things. Yeah.
Did the surgeon declare the surgery a success?
Well, I have to say they use all sorts of medical words. So he was saying something like there'd been no unforeseen problems that we haven't been. I mean, there was a whole load of medical terminology, which meant, in plain English, yes, a success.
Okay.
But he didn't actually use that word.
Yeah. I see. All right. First time caller line, you are on the air with Professor Warwick in Great Britain.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I was calling to ask you if you had seen the newspaper article that came out last week about the new robot designed by Sony Corporation and the little war they got going against Mitsubishi and all that, all those other Japanese companies.
I haven't seen that particular one, but I know the war you're on about. I mean, the last decade really has seen enormous advances, certainly in the physical side, but I don't know if that robot is an intelligent robot or what. Maybe you could...
Yeah, this article was saying that this robot that they built has got, like, two cameras for eyes, and it can distinguish a whole bunch of things from, like, the corner of a table.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It can walk on carpet, you know, and it'll balance itself, and if it falls down, it's programmed to get itself up, and it'll walk just like a person. And it says that, you know, if you ask a question, it'll answer you back. It's got an extensive vocabulary, and besides, it's, you know, I can play music, dance, and do all kinds of stuff.
I had heard that the Japanese were pretty far ahead in the world of robotics, a lot of stuff that hasn't made it over here yet, Professor. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I had the benefit last summer. I was over in Japan doing some lectures and so on for about 3 weeks and was able to work with the Honda team, particularly with their little Asimo robot. And, I mean, for me, it was absolutely fantastic. So certainly on the physical side, I think they are way ahead. And some of the things you're talking about earlier about us, it's not happened so quickly. It certainly seems to be really speeding up at the present time, and the Japanese are very much part of that.
Isn't your government, since you're a Brit, isn't your government likely to be very interested in how your experiment comes out, particularly if you get more of a connection than you anticipated? Isn't there liable to be a knock at your door?
One would hope so. I have to admit, though, in the UK, whether government or otherwise, people tend generally, apart from myself, to be a little bit more conservative and a little bit slower to pick things up. So I think there's probably more likely to be a knock at my door from either the Japanese government or the U.S. government in particular. That's more what I'm expecting.
Well, we'd be guessing the Japanese over here were pretty cynical about that. All right, a wild card line. You're on the air with Professor Warwick. Where are you, please?
Thank you. I am in Roanoke, Virginia.
Yes, sir.
My question, I had one for Mr. Warwick and one for yourself also, if there's time.
Okay.
Kevin, have you ever heard of a game called Shadowrun?
I haven't, no.
Okay. It's a role-playing game, and it's evolved into a series of novels and all sorts of, you know, spin-off stuff has come from it. It deals with futuristic technology, and they have source books that go into theoretical, I'm sure that nobody has done scientific research on it, detail on the very subjects that you're discussing, everything from, say, wired reflexes to make a human faster, to subdermal radio implants, to augmented strength, and, you know, all sorts of other things using the techniques that you're talking about here, and it's just really amazing to me to see it come to life. You may find it an interesting subject to look at, you know, if you have free time and you don't, you know, you want to do something to get away from your work.
Professor, is it possible that through an interface of the type that you have now, or one down the line, there could be augmented strength? In other words, that the human body could be made to actually physically do things that it cannot do now.
I mean, there's so many different aspects of the answer to that. I think the answer is very much yes. If you look at a sportsman who feels he's pushing the thing to the limit, the possibilities of, with something like this, of actually pushing a little bit further certainly come about.
Well, we've all heard these stories of, for example, mothers whose children are pinned under a car will go over and pick that car up, and where that strength comes from, nobody knows.
That's right. Well, maybe we're about to find out, I guess. I mean, if we can find out certain signals associated with the sports person when they're pushing it to the limit or going for the world record, and record those signals as they're doing it, then maybe we can tweak them a little bit, and that pushes the record forward a bit more. So that woman with the car, if she had had an implant and we record those signals, perhaps she could repeat that very regularly.
Wow.
But I think on the strength issue, I think there's another aspect here. Rather than looking just at upgrading the human as far as extra strength, of course, once you're connected to the computer, then a computer and the network can bring about all sorts of physical things for you. So rather than you lifting the car or moving forwards, just by thinking about it, you can bring about some piece of technology to do an awful lot more for you.
Huh.
So it's sort of externalizing your physical capability.
But you were talking a little while ago about fighter planes flying themselves, essentially, because they can make decisions faster, or machines can, than human beings, react faster, right?
That's right, yeah.
Well, then, what do we need the humans for?
That's the big question. I mean, that was something I pondered on, and in The Matrix, the answer was, well, they become an energy source for the machines, which is one, maybe it's a little bit over the top, but it certainly is one solution. It is a big question. How do we fit into the technological world of the future? I'm hoping as a cyborg there is a role to play, but as a human, it becomes a very big question, yeah.
Well, if, for example, you could induce in a human being the kind of strength we talked about with the mother and the child in the car,
yes,
then there would be applications for conflict for sure. I mean, If you had a soldier who was capable in short spurts of that kind of strength, you would have an army that could not be defeated, wouldn't you?
Unless you had another army which had slightly upgraded chips and was able to give a bit extra strength.
Either way, it's the same old story.
Absolutely. offer charms, cause I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Dream lover, where are you? With a love oh so true.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
My guest is Professor Kevin Warwick in Great Britain, the first human cyborg. Dream lover? You take this technology on out a little bit, and it's Britney Spears for all. Or one. If you follow me. There are some aspects of this that are so astounding that it's hard to even think about them. It's like thinking about how high is the sky. Dream lover? Oh, yes. All right, Professor Warwick has a couple of books. You may want to investigate both of them, and you can get both of them. The first one really isn't available in America, but if you go to amazon.com.uk, you'll get there. It's called In the Mind of the Machine. Sounds like an absolutely fascinating book. His new book is The Quest for Intelligence. You might chase after both of these. I mean, when you're listening to somebody as committed as this man is to have actually turned himself into a cyborg, you might want to listen to what he has to say. Professor, that's something that I just wanted to cover very quickly. I was sort of joking about Britney Spears there, but really, once you have a brain connection of this sort, one can only imagine some of the possibilities, which would include a full-blown sexual experience, for example, that you would experience as though you were there.
Completely, absolutely, yes. I mean, for you, it might be Britney Spears. For other people. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't. I mean, it raises all sorts of questions as to husband and wife relationships. I mean,
you'd go to the local video library and pull out probably some sort of flashcard memory or something. Take it home and
that's it. I think for me, it would probably be Meg Ryan. But
Meg Ryan's. Yeah.
I'd certainly take that one out several times, probably. But it's how does that affect relationships? I mean, mentally.
I don't know. Have you mentioned Meg Ryan to your wife?
I'll
find out right now.
I'll try it tonight, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Listen.
I mean, even if physically you're not going through the whole physical thing, mentally you would be. So it raises enormous questions, yeah.
Okay. Daniel in Austin, Texas, by computer, says the following, really interesting, which would be easier or more likely, the brain controlling a computer or the computer controlling the brain? Now, if you got into a full interface condition, would it be a mutual exchange of information or would it be a control?
I would see it as a mutual exchange. Maybe I'm looking at it through pink glasses.
Maybe.
I think ultimately, maybe that it's a very good question because it would be unlikely ultimately that it's one human brain connected to one computer. It would be one human brain connected to a computer network. And then it's very difficult. It perhaps is more the latter thing. It's more that the human becomes a node on the network, something like that. But it is, I think it would still be shared that it would be a mutual thing.
So, but you never know. I mean,
you never know.
I mean, you could get halfway across the Atlantic if you were hooked up and suddenly divert to Seattle and go see, you know, be compelled to see Bill Gates or something.
Even that, yeah. But I think the thought of, the pink glasses thought of saying the computer would be at your control, I can't really see that. I think the best or most realistic thing would be a mutual sharing, that it has got things that it is good at doing and you have got things that you're good at doing and you bring them two together, which is the whole concept mentally of a cyborg.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Professor Kevin Warwick. Hello. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. I have a one quick thing, and then I want to ask a question.
Sure. Where are you, by the way?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ray from Smithfield, Virginia, WMIS.
All right.
Are you aware of the fellow who's doing research into antlers and the process that animals that do have antlers use to grow them and shed them?
I'm not. I must admit I'm not. No.
There's a fellow who's doing this, and his primary interest has been, up until now, amputees. Because what happens with antlers is that this is a growth of bone that comes out through the skin, and then the skin forms a connection to it, which is then impervious to disease and so on and so forth. And that research has been going on for quite a while. And it's something that if you want to do long-term electrode through the skin, you might look into.
Yes, yeah,
Okay. Another question that I had was whether you've looked into tattooing these external wiring things on. Since they have to carry very low voltage, you could probably use a magnetic ink and tattoo them on.
Yeah, I don't know. And the latter thing, I mean, the antlers point is a very good one as far as infection and that aspect, but the tattooing, I don't know, we're trying something different here with direct connections to the nervous system. So rather than just going locally under the skin or from the outside, we're trying essentially to make direct connections to the brain. And really this is a stepping off point, just connecting onto the nervous system first.
If you wanted to be certain you were going to get a direct connection to the brain, where would you do the hookup, doctor? Not saying that you will not with what you've done, because you might, but if you wanted to really ensure it, where would you go? The spine?
I think going directly to the brain, you would tend to get itself, the brain itself, you get regions at the moment, so... Maybe you get a motor region, maybe you get a region to do with memory and so on. So you're getting a certain aspect. So I guess the top of the spine or something would look to be a good place to, you'd have to say that's probably the best place to go.
Or directly to the brain. In other words.
Yeah, but that might need a number of link-ups, a number of hook-ups, how much the brain could adapt. Or whether it was just used, the connection first up was just used for certain aspects rather than lots of different things. I don't think we can look at a one-to-one link, each brain cell connected to one wire. That's not realistic. But putting a number of ports, communication input-outputs to the brain, yeah, I think that's possible, but where they go, we've got a lot to learn for that, I think.
I interviewed a neurosurgeon, professor, that was doing spinal cord work, and he was implanting electrodes in a portion of the spinal cord, and he found out by accident, this is unbelievable, you might have read the story, I don't know, he found out by accident, working on some women, he could produce, just by pushing a button, he could actually produce an orgasm in a woman.
Yeah.
You read about that?
Oh, I did.
I interviewed him. Incredible. I mean, so if that can be done.
Yeah, well, to be honest, one of the things we're looking at here with the spinally injured, of course, someone with a spinal injury, their sexual capabilities
gone.
Are, in a sense, removed. I mean, can we bring them back again? So it's looking at the whole thing, really. Yeah.
He actually patented the process.
I don't blame him.
God help us all. Well, I don't either. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Professor Warwick. Hello.
Dr. Warwick.
Yeah.
I've always understood that the heat factor would be a problem in increasing human performance. Would that be a problem in this application?
Do you mean heat externally to the body or heat internally?
Heat internally created by the electromagnetic field or also the the added friction of, say, enhancing the muscular performance?
Yeah, I mean, you may well be right. It's something we haven't yet. We're still trying to pick up, can we detect heat and cold and things like that? That's something we're yet to do. But how it affects the operation and how it affects performance, we're not there yet. It's a really interesting factor, though. I'll report back.
You remember the last time you and I spoke, we said once you're hooked up to the interface, just in terms of it reading you or the computer reading what's coming, have you tried the old pain test yet? In other words, creating, you know, sticking yourself with a needle or something or another for and looking for the reaction?
Well, that's what we're up to at the moment. But to be honest, it's a needle in a haystack, if I can phrase it. I mean, literally a needle, because we have to find where to actually bring about the pain.
That's going to mean that you're going to have to sit there with a needle and go, there it is.
You've got it. Well, that's what we're up to. I mean, the one big advantage of using the hand is that there are so many sensory pickup points, the touch sensors and so on.
So you're going to be sort of a human pincushion.
Oh, exactly. Exactly, yeah. And then suddenly we'll get a signal. But again, it's what signals exactly are we looking for? What's the the woman before talking about different frequencies and so on?
Sure.
And so it's not only scanning through all over my hand with little, like a little pincushion, it's looking through all different frequencies and then you have problems with earthing. So there are all sorts of technical problems, which it's fantastic. It's really exciting scientifically, but it's very laborious at the same time.
How much of a team do you have to help you out?
Oh, right, yeah. Well, I guess there have been something like 30 different people involved to get us where we are at the moment, but on a day-to-day basis, there's about, say, 4 or 5 of us in the lab. Some are looking more at the medical side, which literally what we've been talking at there, trying to map out what we're doing. And then there's a couple of guys working more on the sort of cybernetic-y projects. We're in a couple of weeks' time, we're hoping that I can do a demonstration from the nervous system to control some of the technology in the building here, just get the coffee maker to come on and things like that to show what will be possible pretty soon. So there's some more on the medical side. But there's a small team on a day-to-day basis, though.
Okay. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Professor Warwick. Hi. Hello?
Yes, Art.
Yes, sir.
Fascinating topic. Professor Warwick, I've talked to individuals, I'm a researcher, who claim that they have implants in their brain, and they claim that there are certain unnamed government agencies, the NSA and private contractors, responsible for that. And I have three quick questions. They claim that their thoughts or maybe their sub-vocalizations are being read using portable devices like a Walkman. In real time, and that there are these real-time experiments capturing their brain waves using magnetic amplifiers and satellite uplinks. Now, they also claim that that the NSA is trying to access their unconscious mind in some kind of psi war experiments.
All right, well, that's getting pretty far out there, but Professor...
Yeah. No, I have had quite a few people contact me with the same lines. I have to admit, technically, from what we understand at the moment, it is very, very, very unlikely. I mean, this is the scientist in me not saying it's 100% untrue, but, you know, you always allow a certain element of doubt, but I am very skeptical.
Yeah, but, Professor, my own government has a history of being exceptionally interested in mind control to the degree that they used... guinea pigs and chemical experiments with LSD and all kinds of incredible things that nobody would have believed until they made it public. If they were that interested in mind control, then obviously the technology that you're now immersed in would be, it seems to me, an irresistible temptation for them.
Oh, certainly, yes. And you really don't know what's going on behind closed doors. I have to admit that. You can find out some of it eventually, but, I agree with you. Yeah, so
they've got some really big closed doors, too.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yes, no, I expect very much. Can I just say, talking about books and things before, all of what I'm going through here, I have a new book. This is a plug for a book, but a new book, I, Cyborg, which really is detailing the operation, the why we're doing it, and also the results as they happen.
So you are now writing this, or it's already written?
Well, no, I'm writing it as we go. So every so often I take a little bit of time out. And I mean, hopefully there'll be an American publisher for it. It's certainly Random House in the UK, which is a big publisher. So that'll turn out in the middle of the summer, I guess.
I think an American publisher will be right there for it, believe me.
Well, I hope so.
Like you're keeping a diary.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a diary in the form of a book, literally saying, and saying, before we do this, this is what we're expecting, and then, well, when we actually did it, this is what we found. So, and detailing the operation and what went wrong and what happened and how it felt to have sort of an electrocuted hand and things like that.
And so you think perhaps by midsummer you'll be done?
Yeah, it's scheduled August in the UK, so hopefully the US then or just after or something.
Well, don't let your publisher push you too far to do too much.
No.
They can do that. Come on, let's get this 9-volt battery on there.
you're determined to try that 9-volt battery. I have to try the art test, I think, and do that one just for you.
Don't do that. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Professor Warwick in Great Britain. Hello.
How you doing, Art?
Okay, sir.
Oh, well, this is the second time I've called your show.
Well, good.
I'm still nervous because, like, as soon as you picked up the phone, my heartbeat rate went about twice as high as it was.
Take a deep breath.
Yeah, I'm okay. I had a question for you, Professor Warwick.
Sure.
Well, first of all, how old are you?
48.
Oh, okay. At least you're honest. The question I had for you was regarding the brain as a computer. How, like a piece of software, how fault-tolerant is the brain when something sudden and unexpected happens?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, sometimes we don't know, really. Sometimes it seems to be extremely fault-tolerant, and people such as stroke victims, they have a serious problem occur, and yet it is able to get back sometimes.
That's true.
Back completely to normal, but other times there's major problems. So
now, going back to what you were saying about, and what you were saying, Art, about static electricity, if there's a sudden voltage, a sudden high voltage signal that is sent, but if it's the right kind of signal, do you suppose that there is, like a computer virus, something that could be sent into the brain that would shut it down, send somebody into a coma?
Yeah, it's possible, isn't it, Professor?
Yeah, I would have thought definitely possible. I mean, I hope it's not going to happen with me, but if I suddenly stop talking in the next few seconds, then, you know, that might have been, let's hope I keep talking, but... Yeah, no, you're quite right. Or certainly change the way it's working in a less serious way than that. Yeah, that has got to be a distinct possibility.
How long did it take you before they let you go from airport security when you kept trying to tell them, hey, I'm a human cyborg? How long before they let you go?
Oh, well, that I'll tell you next week. I haven't actually traveled, haven't actually flown with it until next week after this the digital art symposium at Tucson.
I thought reading that you had been stopped at airport security because of some piece of hardware that was in you.
Oh, no, I think that's a guy, Steve Mann. I mean, when I up at Toronto, he carries it all. There's a load of technology he carries on the outside of his body. For me, I did fly with my previous implant, which we talked about before, which is like an identification thing, and there wasn't any problem with that one. Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that this will be the same. I mean, I could end up actually getting to the United States and not being able to get back again. So if somebody's got a spare room somewhere, I might need it in a week or so.
You know, another movie that came to mind really quick is Johnny Mnemonic. The fact that he could store, you know, hundreds and hundreds of gigabytes in his brain with an interface from the computer.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that sort of thing, I mean, if it's stored in the computer, but the computer's linked to the brain, looking at it that way, then that sort of thing becomes... realizable. I don't know necessarily storing it in the brain. I see more of a, rather than having the chips or the computer in the brain, more a radio connection to the computer is much more realistic, I feel.
All right, caller, we've got to scoot. We're out of time.
Sure, thanks.
All right, thank you very much. Professor, it has been, again, first of all, Wow, thank you for the interview. I'm really glad the operation is an apparent success, but still, we've got to do another program because I have a feeling the big results are just around the corner.
Oh, you're sure, yeah. On the operation, on my website, people can go and have a look at some of the pictures. But beware, but the pictures of the operation and so on. That's www.kevinwarwick.com.
We've got a link up, so you can actually see the gory opening up, huh?
That's right, and there's a photo gallery there, and you can go and see some pretty bloodthirsty pictures, yeah.
Professor, have a wonderful day there, and it is daytime now.
And it's beautiful sunshine, even though it's England. It's gorgeous, yeah.
Have a great day.
Thanks. Cheers, Art. Good talking to you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta.
Falling in love was the last thing I had on my mind. Holding you is a warmth that I thought I could never find.